This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Protestations of Obama himself in his speech to children in Northern Ireland about peace. When he said, those who choose a path of peace, I promise you that the United States of America will support you every step of the way. We will be the wind at your back. Now I ask you, is this person going for the Hypocrite of the Century Award? Because we have to call things by their right names. And the reality is that by any serious examination, this man is a war criminal.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
In the original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
New government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat and put on the Kevlar. It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American? I suspect you are. So remember to visit our website, a21r.com, and of course, newcaliforniastate.com. That's newcaliforniastate.com. So welcome aboard. In this hour, we're going to be listening to my interview by Doug Hagman of the Hagman Report. Just recently done the other day. A very, very compelling interview. It's going to take up most of the hour. And, of course, you can hear this interview on the podcast. We'll be putting up all of the podcasts today, getting everything all up and running and current. So, anyway, here we go with this. We're going to play this maybe interrupt in certain times and so on so we understand. This is me with Doug Hagman for the Hagman Report.
In the Sierra Nevadas. We're located about it's about 60 miles northeast of Sacramento, California, up in the Sierra Nevadas, and Gold Rush territory. Oroville, of course, the city of gold. It was founded on gold, and it covers that whole area up above Oroville, or the city of Oroville. The water itself exits usually through the Hyatt Power Plant. And the dam is not a concrete dam. It's an earthen dam. It is a dam that is about 900 feet tall. It overtops one. Actually, the overtopping of the dam itself is about 922 if you wanted to do that. It's a mile long or a mile wide stretching across the Feather River Canyon. And it's got a spillway, a main spillway, and it's got an emergency spillway. And it was built in the 1950s, so it's over 50 years old. It has a lot of repair problems. In other words, these dams, when you have a dam, everybody looks at it and say, wow, it's concrete, it's dam, it's big, and all. They have properly, and of course, this particular dam, it was built in a faulty fashion. A couple of things were faulting it. One, when they poured the concrete at the very base of the dam, they found out about 6 months into the project that they cracked it, actually. So it's got a crack in that. And then they built it up with rocks, and rocks that were left over from the dredges of the gold mining era through the Feather River. And they had three grades of rocks. They're small, medium, and large. These are river-washed rocks, so they're very, very smooth. And when they built the dam, they should have fractured the rocks. Now, you can imagine the rocks. You basically have a bunch of rocks mixed with sand that basically make up a whole bunch of ball bearings when there's pressure behind it.
True, yeah.
These river-washed rocks. And then the soil and the hillside that the spillway sits on is not competent rock. It, in other words, a competent rock would be like granite, where you can drill down into it and you can fasten things. This is more of a crumbly type of composition rock of granite and other compounds, but it's not solid. It is not solid. So therein lies a problem, because you have this dam that stretches across the Feather River. It abuts into a hillside, and on that hillside is the spillway, the two spillways. And the thing in question is, of course, not just the dam itself. That's really never really been in question about being overtopped or destroyed. What's been in question has always been the adjacent main spillway, and then the emergency spillway, and then what is going on in the soil that supports the spillway. Hmm. And there lies the big problem. And in 2017, I actually, to go cover the story, I went up to the top of the dam and walked. Are actually tumbling over the OG Weirs. It had overtopped just a few hours earlier. First time in the dam's history that it overtopped in the OG Weir. That's the weir that stretches across the emergency spillway. And they allowed that to happen because they had a blowout of some of the plates that support the main spillway on the 7th of February of 2017. And what that was there was water underneath the spillway, because water was going through the hillside. It was porting, as it's known. It was going through the hillside. The water was under pressure from the lakeside, and it started squirting through all the different soils, and ultimately put so much pressure against the backsides of the spillway concrete that it blew out, literally blew up. People thought it was being blown up with explosives, and it wasn't that at all. It was the back pressure that was being created as the water was going over the top of the spillway, and then also being pushed up by the water behind it, and that caused the lifting of the plates and the explosion. So they decided to turn off the spillway, and they were right in the middle of a huge inundation of water coming through the Feather River's watershed at the time. So they had to make a decision. So they made the decision. Now, this is it. They made the decision, since it was damaged, they would shut that off, and they would use the emergency spillway for the first time. And, of course, the emergency spillway was kind of like a joke. People had been suing to get the DWR to actually complete the emergency spillway. So if there was a situation, none of the emergency wouldn't have to be used. But when they decided to turn off the main spillway, of course, the water rose in the lake. Go figure. And then by the time the 11th comes around, which I show up, it's starting to overtop the spillway and cascade down. And when I went out there, it was only a couple hours old. I was just one of few people. The only people that were out there were construction people. And I was looking at it, and I was going, my God, they've got a real problem here, because you can actually see the water cutting into the hot side of the hill, making its way up toward the OG Weir. And I'm saying, this is going to be a disaster. Well, that was at noontime on the 11th. And I asked one of the workers up there, I said, why aren't they using the main spillway right now, even though it's damaged? They said, well, they were really concerned were to use the main spillway, all that concrete and everything would go downstream and destroy the habitat for the salmon.
Okay.
I said,
okay. We certainly don't want that to happen.
No. So I looked at him and said, so they're making the choice of fish over humans. And the guy said, just no. Without hesitation, he said,
oh, my gosh.
This is all documented. You could see these guys out there trying to save salmon fry and everything in this big, huge disaster that's enveloping. So what happened was that the disaster kind of keeps on going. Now, it's kind of interesting. On the 7th, Sheriff Corey Honey was in his office with, this is the date in which the actual blowout took place, so it's the 7th of February. Right. He's in his office, and one of them says to him, he says, "Hey, Sheriff, have you heard about that big emergency that's going on over at the dam?" And keep in mind, the sheriff's department office is just a few miles from the dam. And he goes, "No." He says, "What's going on over there?" And he said, "I haven't heard a thing." And he said, "Well, there's a big blowout of the spillway." He goes, "What?" He says, "Well, how do you know that?" And he says, "Well, I'm looking at it right now on Facebook."
You can't make this stuff up, man.
What do you make this up?
Oh, my gosh.
You're the sheriff. Wouldn't you like to know that you have the largest dam in the United States, one of the top five dams in the world, is gone. And it's not a little problem. It's a big problem. And so he found out, you know, several hours after the event. So he sent his detectives up and said, "What's going on?" And actually, he got quite aggressive with them because as it turned out, and there's a big story behind this, as it turned out, the DWR people were lying to the sheriff, and you don't want to ever do that to Sheriff Corey Honey. Now, Sheriff Corey Honey is a very, he is very much an originalist constitutionalist sheriff, so he takes things very seriously, and he takes his job and the safety of all of us people very seriously. He gets that, and he felt that the DWR people were being very cavalier about their decision making. Well, that really panned out after the 11th when I went going on, and mind you, we were not communicating. We haven't talked about anything like that, but he's doing his own thing. So finally, he's running around to figure out if everything is on the up and up and all that good stuff, and it turns out that it is, at least he thinks. And so he goes up on the 12th, which is a Sunday, and he's walking around our place, and everything seems to be real copacetic and everything, and nobody's raising any concerns. And of course, all along, the thing that I spotted on the 11th, the head cutting is taking place, and which is going to be a disaster. So he's walking out of the office of the DWR, and he notices one of the engineers got his head in his hands looking at a picture, shaking his head. And he stands in the doorway, and one of the women there says to him, "Well, does the sheriff know about this yet?" And so the sheriff says, "Hello, know about what?" Yeah. And he just happened to be there. This was stance and chance.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, so anyway, the next thing that we hear is that he tells a story, and he tells a story. We've got him on tape and everything, and he's told this story many, many times. That he confronts him and says, "Well, what's the problem?" He says, "Well, Sheriff, we got a problem." He says, "Well, what's the problem?" Now, see, he kind of switches into gear when you listen to him talk. He gets into detective. "I'm asking a criminal a question here, and you better answer me straight."
I like that. I like that. Go ahead. Yes, yes. Continue. Okay.
And so anyway, he says, "Well, what is the problem?" He says, "Well, we got what's called head cutting." Well, that's the same thing I saw on the 11th, right? And he says, "Oh, what's that mean?" He says, "Well, head cutting is where the soil is eaten away by the water." And he says, "Well, what does that mean?" So he goes, and so finally the guy says, "Well, listen, Sheriff, before we proceed any further, I want to go meet with my friends, my other engineers, so we can give you a real true story about what this is all about." He agrees. So they go off for about 10 or 15 minutes. And so now, unbeknownst to Sheriff Corey Honey and others, there's a person that was there that I knew. In that meeting, they went off to, right?
Okay.
So out of total context, I get a call a little bit later after this last incident. And this guy says, you know, they were not going to tell the sheriff what was going on in that meeting. I had no idea what he meant at the time. I had no contextual knowledge of what that was. But anyway, but as found out from Corey Honey later and my listening to him in the story at lunchtime, he was saying that, we met, and he said, "Yeah, these guys came in after the meeting, and they said, Sheriff, we got this problem. This head cutting is going much faster than we thought." And he says, it's head cutting at about 35 feet an hour. And so he looks at him and says, "Well, how far away is the head cutting from the OG Weir?" And he says, "Well, it's about 35 feet. He says, "I have 35. You have an hour?" He says, "Yes." He says, "What's going to happen in an hour?" He says, "Well, that OG Weir is going to be undercut. The OG Weir is going to collapse, and you're going to lose about a top third of the dam." And he said, and he goes, well, what does that mean? He says, well, what that means is going to wipe out the entire town of Oroville and many of the towns downstream, and probably a lot of people will be killed. And so this is an hour away from that happening.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind, what I found out later was that person called me and said they were not going to tell the sheriff what was about to happen.
I figure that's a bad move, but go on.
But they did. They ultimately did.
Okay.
But that shows you a lot of what their intentions were, in my opinion. So anyway, he said, I pulled the big red lever, and I pulled it out so we had the evacuation. And he ordered the main spillway to be opened up again and brought down to certain levels. And it took about 4 hours to bring they went up to 150,000 CFS, which is a big spill over the damaged spillway. And of course, it damaged it like crazy even more, but it saved everybody's lives because nearly 200,000 people were put in the emergency motion, and it clogged all the highways, and all the highways that exit out are all in the inundation zone. So those 200,000 people, if the dam had gone, like they said, would have been wiped out without a chance. They couldn't. The traffic was so heavy, they couldn't move. They couldn't get out. They would have been lost. And if it continued on, it would have taken out Sacramento and south of that, probably taken out a million lives. That's what people estimate. So,
all right, this is incredible. Why aren't
lives,
aside from you and a few others, why aren't people speaking out about this? I mean, I know you are, but how come I'm not hearing about this on anywhere?
Well, they've got a really good system of keeping people silenced. The DWR in the state of California, of course, the whole mechanism of keeping everybody silenced is all in play. This has been something that's been traditional. They started against us. You know, of course, we were always right about all of our instincts. They hate what we're doing, of course. The part of the problem is that there is some defense work that's been done and has been done or even currently being done at the dam involving Lawrence, Livermore, and Berkeley and so on.
Okay.
New research and things like that. And they also, it was revealed to us, have atomic demolition devices installed in the dam, ADMs.
Well, what could possibly go wrong there? I mean,
he could press a button in China or something and the whole thing could go up. But those ADMs are designed to destroy the dam in case of invasion, which is what they were. Remember, this was built during the Cold War, and in the Cold War, we were occupying Germany, and we had whole divisions of people running around with these ADMs ready to install and destroy dams and infrastructure throughout all of Germany to stop those Soviets from coming in. That was the design. So that's why we have ADMs, and most of the dams in California have them as well. I'm revealing that, but this is something that was also revealed. Here I am. I was trapped in my own house on the 12th because I was in the radio station. I was doing work. And normally when you have an emergency, you know, this big whaler goes off and the emergency broadcast network and all that. None of that happened in the radio station, which I thought was odd. But then I go out in my car and I drive home and everybody's going in the opposite direction of where, I mean, everybody, all the roads are jammed.
That's a bad sign, by the way.
That's a bad sign. So I get home and I get a text from my friend that says, are you all right? And I text him back. Finally, I called him. I said, what are you talking about? He says, well, they evacuated everybody. Well, there's nothing on the radio. I do radio. There's nothing on the radio. No warnings. Nobody, you know, but it was all done basically by word of mouth. Some of the television stations, the Sacramento stations and Chico stations put the word out. But there was a big delay. I was stuck in my house because there was no way I was getting out. And I started receiving phone calls from my friends. I used to work in the Oroville area, so I know a lot of people up there, and I know people who work in the dam system up there. And they were calling me, kind of giving me inside information, people that in the dam, people around the dam. And one of the calls that I got was about 31 trucks had driven up to the dam. And as it turned out, it was only 30 equivalent about this. But the call was is that they just took out all the atomic bombs of the dam. That was one of the comments. And I'm sitting there in my office, in the studio like I am right now. I said, atomic bombs? It's like, what? Where did that all come from? So I'm hearing stories about they weren't going to tell them. I didn't have the context about that. And, of course, the ADMs, I found out that's something that and we published this information. We got it from double secret probation sources that told us about them and the size of them and all that stuff. We all know the details. But this is something that's used in case there's going to be an invasion.
I'm just curious. I got to ask this question because I just think this way. Did the people who are removing these, did they know what that, what the, did they know? Oh, yeah, we're taking out some atomic bombs. I mean, or did they think that they were just taking, I mean, did they know what they were taking out? I'm just curious.
Yeah, yeah, they, I'm not going to reveal how they knew because I think that's, that would be a little bit over the top for me. But they were people who knew what they were doing.
Okay.
It wasn't a terrorist group or anything like that that was removing them and hiding them. There was a set plan that they followed.
It's good to know.
But there was also a lot of equipment, as I was told. I was told the ADMs and equipment, which meant research equipment, was also removed. So that was what the reason why they had so many trucks, from what I understand.
Got it. So, I mean, I don't even know where to begin. For those folks just tuning in, Paul Preston is my guest, and what a tremendous man he is. The links to his website will be in the program description box, Agenda 21 Radio. Everyone knows who Paul Preston is. He's a tremendous voice. He's the top 50 most influential, most listened to streaming talk show host on the planet. So you know who he is. But this Orville Dam, what's the bottom line here? Are we talking about some nefarious... is this incompetence or is this something else?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. Jerry Brown, who was the governor at the time, failed miserably, absolutely failed miserably, unequivocally failed. I think he should have been arrested, actually. I'll go that far. In fact, I think that the operators at the dam up there, I think Corey Honey didn't arrest him. He should have. He should have arrested everybody up there because of their negligence, gross negligence. But also that went right up to the governor. The governor failed actually to even lift a finger and respond after this whole thing happened. He made a secret visit to the dam.
Okay.
And this is how secretive he was, where he wasn't saying anything or making any comments. And it was interesting. We're kind of outing them and going, well, you know, it's like, you know, 3 days after the disaster and you haven't said anything. What's wrong with you? And so they started holding press conferences. This will show you the level of this man's duplicity. They were holding news conferences at 10 o'clock on Wednesdays. And so the third Wednesday comes along and they say, oh, there's no news conference today. No news conference. Everybody go home. So everybody goes home, right? Except for one reporter out of Chico, one of the TV stations down there, she didn't get the memo. So she shows up at 10 at the DWR Glen Drive thing down there. And she walks in where the press conference is going to be, and there's nobody there. And so she walks up, and who's there is Jerry Brown and his wife. She's there. They're there. They're the only ones in there, and they're meeting with these people. And so she walks up, and she's going to, like, walk over to question them, right, because she's a good reporter. So all of a sudden, some guy comes in between them, and he says, what are you doing? And she says, well, I'm here to – it's a press conference. She says, there's no press conference. She says, well, I want to ask Jerry Brown a question. And he looks at her square, and he says, there's no Jerry Brown here. You don't see Jerry Brown. Okay, listen, she's on air saying this. And this I know it happened. I mean, because I've talked to her. But I mean, this is what they're saying. There's no Jerry Brown here.
Yeah, he's not here.
He's just, you know, a figment of your imagination. So he made a secret visit, but he doesn't come out in public, never shows any kind of support for the people that were, you know, nearly threatened with their lives. In fact, about half a dozen people did die that night just because, you know, car accidents. There were numerous car accidents or people who had heart attacks. You know, so people did die that night, just not as many as perhaps they thought there was going to die. But, you know, this whole thing points to a bigger problem for Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown and Bruce Babbitt teamed up, and Jerry Brown has made a commitment as governor that he would tear down dams in California. That was his big focus. And he went to so much to an extent that he hired Bruce Babbitt. Now, Bruce Babbitt was the king. He was the king of the dam busters. What he decided was Secretary of the Interior under the Bill Clinton era that we should rewild the America. That meant if we were to do that, rewild, you know, like go back to 300-400 years ago when what America looked like. And one of the best ways to do that is to destroy all the dams and return all the watersheds to their natural habitat. It's called rewilding.
Wow.
And here in California, we actually have people, the Department of Water or Department of Fish and Wildlife, who actually go to work every day to work on getting people off the land so they can turn it over to the native animals. I'm serious. There are people working right now as we speak in Sacramento trying to figure out how best to get people off the rural properties.
It almost sounds like the boy getting rid of the dam or having a dam failure would fit right nicely into that agenda, or am I just seeing things that aren't there? Like Jerry Brown.
You know, Jerry Brown, the July before this incident happened, which would have been July 2016, hired Bruce Babbitt to help him with dam removal in California. And he came up here to Englebright and some of the dams that are around where I'm living and pontificated that we're going to tear these dams down. I mean, we have this on record. You can't make this up. And of course, they have been tearing down dams all throughout the West. That seems to be one of the big things. And under the guise that they're going to keep people safe, I guess. But of course, to say nothing about flooding. California, before we had dams and reservoirs, I might add, flooded every year. In fact, the Central Valley was basically a water basin every year. And it wasn't until they started putting up dams and levees and things like that to preserve their lands that we actually could make the Central Valley. We're talking about the San Joaquin Valley and Sacramento Valleys up north, suitable for food and habitation. Because every year it was being flooded. I think the 1861 flood was one of the worst. I mean, Leland Stanford had to crawl out of the third-story window of the governor's mansion in Sacramento into a canoe to be taken down to, are you ready for this, the state capitol, to say talk about the State of the Union or State of the State. That's how bad that was. I mean, you're talking, that was it. But these dams came along. And by the way, to shoot down any notion about the droughts, you know, they claim we had a drought, for years, which really wasn't the case. We had enough water storage, but they kept on running the water out to sea.
And the reason, that
was to preserve fish habitat. They were trying to preserve the salinity balance in the delta, the river delta. And that was to protect the Delta smelt. The Delta smelt is an invasive species. It's not a natural species, but they were trying to save that one. And then in a lot of these rivers, they were proclaiming that it's a salmon hatchery and we've got to save the salmon fisheries and blah, blah, blah. Well, here's part of the problem, which is totally points to why their argument about drought and climate change and why we have to save fish is that before these dams were built and the reservoirs were made, these rivers, most of these rivers that they're talking about, actually ran dry by August and September and October. They were dry rivers.
Right.
And it wasn't until man came in and built these reservoirs and they could actually drive water across the rivers all year long. So they had no argument about the fisheries and the salmon, but they make one up.
Got it.
They made one up for the Delta smelt. It's not a native species. In fact, it's kind of interesting now. They've been running tests in the Delta, and for the last several years, UC Davis, they haven't been able to find any Delta smelt at all. Huh. Yet we're running the dams, draining the reservoirs at the breakneck speed.
Wow. Okay.
That's what farmers down in San Joaquin Valley to fallow their land, and they couldn't grow because they didn't have water.
So this whole thing, it seems to me like a population management get the hell off the land, let's make it pristine, eco-green crazy stuff, right?
Well, that's in part. What happened is that you have Nancy Pelosi's husband, Richard Blum. And Richard Blum is one of the largest real estate international brokers in the world, and he's backed the Bank of China. Mm. And, of course, what the Bank of China was doing was funding the purchase of this land that was fallowed and laid dry because there was no water. And they've been big buyers in California. And in fact, the communist Chinese are very, very influential in California and in San Francisco in particular and Sacramento. And of course, down around the Delta area, Stockton and West Sacramento area, the two ported areas. Now and down in Southern California, their Maoist influence of communism is really, really becoming quite pernicious.
Yeah. Yes. I'll just put a period after that. How can we help? I mean, Mr. Preston, Paul Preston is my guest, by the way, folks. Link to the to his primary website in the program description box. But how can we best help? And what can our audience do aside from listening to your program, Agenda 21 Radio, every day? But what should we be doing, if anything? I feel kind of helpless here. I mean, you got the dam. Sorry, Vegas vacation reference there, but Randy Quaid. What do we need to do about this? About that? If anything.
Well, it's awareness, number one, and follow. There's a lot of really good people out there. We've been really keeping them on their heels, and I filed a lawsuit. I have a lawsuit that's pending right now against the Department of Water Resources and the state of California. For their mismanagement, basically, of this dam. That's all coming to fruition here in the next couple of weeks. But we're laying down a complaint. I'm not at liberty to discuss the whole thing right now, but sure. That is going to be moving forward. We took it on ourselves to do that. And we accept donations at a21r.com to help us do that, by the way. There's a donation button to help move that money forward for us because it is expensive, and this is all being paid for out of my pocket and that we wish to have any kind of help financially we can. The other part of it, though, is the awareness, and people can get on YouTube. There's a lot of YouTube live stream channels that are going on out there, and people can see for themselves and witness what is happening. They should go to our website and other websites out there and find out for yourself. There's a lot of disinformation. They troll like crazy, so be aware of that. We understand how the trolling works, and if you find people that are just overtly critical of myself or Scott Cahill or these other people, just go check them out. Just do some history checks on them. You'll find out they're trolling. It's very simple. They usually come out. The trolls that we understand come out of UC Davis. It's several of the professors down there pay these people to troll, and they target us and other people to kind of silence us. So,
yeah, what a surprise there, UC Davis.
Okay. Yeah, no big surprise there, but just the information part of it right now alone and becoming aware of it. But listen, and again, we're fighting this battle right now because this battle is going to come to you no matter where you're at. If it's happening in California, it's going to come to the rest of the nation. I try and make this point very, very succinctly to everybody. They're not going to let up at all. They're not fazed by Donald Trump. They're on a mission. And it's clear to me that this dam is only one part of the equation. The same company that's building the spillway right now just got the contract to tear down four dams along the Klamath River in Northern California. That's Kiewit International. So, that's how it works. They're tearing these dams down. And
And that's the key. It doesn't matter where you are listening to this. You're going to be fighting the same battle. Orville might just be a window of into your future, our future, right. Wherever we might be. Okay. So, wow. Right. Now, are you, because you're in the path of this, and I don't want to see you broadcasting with scuba gear on. I don't mean to minimize or diminish this at all, but can you, you figure that you can prevail on making sure that things are I mean, you're not going to have, this is not going to blow, right? I mean, you figure that you can.
I'd say there's a 50-50 chance, and the management is a key question, and what is their intentions? I think that people are really starting to figure out there's more nefarious intentions than what people thought. I thought that 2 years ago. It was very obvious they had some other intention going on there, especially with Jerry Brown hiring Bruce Babbitt, and they proclaimed to take the dam down. Now, it would just play right into the globalist agenda to take the dam down. Right. And look at just how much disruption it would cause in California. It'd throw California and the nation into chaos. It would wipe out some major transportation hubs here in Northern California and impact the water flow, probably about a 40% hit on the water flow to Southern California. So Southern California would instantly be put into water rationing. These are some things that this is called chaos in California, which is the most populous state in the nation. And right now, I believe we're at a very high risk of this dam going for a number of different reasons, because now we found out that after they've been rebuilding the dam, they never really fixed the issues to begin with that caused the dam to have the porting problem. You know, the best way to fix this dam would have been to fix what's inside of it rather than be topical, even by replacing it with a new spillway. If you don't fix the water movement underneath in the soil behind the spillway, you're just going to repeat it. And, of course, that's what they've been doing. And we've been calling them out for months for this, that they didn't fix it. The water is still a problem. And lo and behold, they built this grand $1.2 billion spillway, and they ran it for about 8-9 days, I believe. They brought it, they say, up to 25,000 CFS, which is nothing. This dam is supposed to have a capacity of 269,000 cubic feet per second. They ran it up to 26,000, and I was there the day they were doing it, and it had to have been more. People were saying they actually brought it up to 60,000, which is still nothing, for the at least for the engineering. I was there, and the ground was shaking like crazy, and I knew that was wrong. I was standing across the road from it. I knew that was wrong, but as it turned out, it was, because they shut down the spillway, and when they shut it down, they not only were they still using the damaged gates from before, and then there was a big leak of the water coming down the spillway, but the spillway plates had buckled, and you could see water that was coming through the seams of the plates that they'd spent so much money on. So they were leaking. And then there was no evidence, and this is really a big thing, there was no evidence of any water from the under drains. There's a series of drains in the spillway, built in the spillway, that are supposed to suck up this water that comes from behind the mountain and spill it out. And none of that worked. It was pretty obvious. The old spillway, I lamented the other night at a speech that I was given, that I would really like to have the old spillway back, because those drains actually worked, even though they had the damage part of it, but it was still working. But these didn't even work. Now, what that means is that they're going to have to tear up the whole spillway to make it right. They have to tear it up again.
Wow.
Because these are drains that are sometimes 20 feet down, and they're clogged. And the reason why they're clogged is they did not fix the problems to begin with. They did not fix the leakage inside the mountain, and they did not replace the gates up at the top, the Tainter radial gates and the headworks. There's 8 gates up there that control the flood water coming in over the spillway. They did not replace them, and that's caused a lot of what are called fine sands, fines as we call them, that have accumulated now. They've accumulated in the under drains and clogged them, so they're no longer functional, period.
And folks, anyone who's owns a house or understands drainage, I mean, look, you know what you very well described. I mean, you know what's going on here by the clogging. You have to fix the original problem in order for that not to happen. I get that, and that wasn't done, and my goodness.
And then there's a problem with the emergency spillway. I mean, it goes up. They didn't fix that problem either, because there was a water that was running underneath that, and that's been a problem. Everybody's been saying it as they were building it, but they didn't fix that either. So, and the emergency spillway, if it's to be used, would really be a disaster anyway. Well, that would be a bigger disaster. So they're in a conundrum. They've been lying, and they're continuing their lies. They've told us that they were going to use the spillway again, and they never did. And then they came out just 2 days ago and said, well, we're not going to use the spillway. We got this study that was done by consultants who we paid and who worked for us anyway. They're our own employees, and they did their own study. And they gave us the okay that the spillway's okay, but in their little paper that they gave, not one time did they refer to the under drains, which are the biggest problem. Not one time did they refer to the leaking plates, which are damaged. We know that. And not one time did they refer to the gates or the emergency spillway. They only referred to, well, the surface looks okay. it's absolutely a joke. And then just this morning, I wake up to find out, oh, guess what? They are saying they are going to use the spillway again. So it's kind of a schizophrenic type of thing. I call it stoner logic more than anything else. I think that somebody must be smoking a lot of...
Well said. Yeah.
Solely stoner logic.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Well, speaking of that, we only have about 14 minutes or 13 minutes left of the program. By the way, I want to thank you so much for your gracious gift of time. I know you're a busy guy, one of the most busiest guys on the planet. Your show, of course, giving speeches and some being such a great activist. If we can kind of segue into New California, and correct me on my terminology and what's going on there. If you feel this is an okay time to do it, to discuss that as well. Okay. Well, let's talk about this. What's going on? Because you got the Stoner Logic people over running the state, and then, of course, you've got people like yourself who are rational human beings who want to see sanity brought back in the government. What's going on?
Well, one of the ways, I was in education for 41 years, and I saw this whole thing coming. It was pretty obvious to me starting in the late 80s that they were really trying to destroy, in my opinion, the public education system. And, of course, if you destroy the public education system, we have a, you know, up until about the early part of the 90s, we had a fantastic educational system here, K through 12 in particular, in California. It was absolutely fantastic, bar none the best. And it really started to go downhill. And the reason why it started to go downhill is the state capital started to withhold money from the schools. And this is really important to understand, because everybody says, well, the schools get plenty of money. Well, they get plenty of money allocated to them, but the money never shows up. Now, that's a different thing. And so the state started to deliberately withhold money from school districts starting in the early 90s, which I find interesting. That's the same time as Nancy Pelosi was up there bringing in Agenda 21 to the House Resolution number, what is it, 353. Just a little side note. But anyway, they started withholding money from schools. And when that happened, the school system really started to decline. They got rid of most of the classes that would utilize hand skills, working with your hands and learning with your hands, like shop classes and home economic and things like that. Anything that dealt with the hands was just forbidden. And they were the quickest things to go out of the curriculum because of cost reasons, so they got rid of those. And education and the dropout rate really started to skyrocket in California. And then education just started, and performance just started to decline. And then they found, as an administrator, it was finding that it was harder and harder to get kids into our own universities. And, you know, California students graduated who had 4.5 GPAs, the whole nine yards, and perfectly capable of should be right up there in the class. They were being denied access. And it started out with the white young men. And white young men led to the females, white females that were being excluded. We found that happening in the population over years. In fact, there was a proposition to try and stop that, Ward Connolly sponsored it in 2000. It was the Prop 206 in 1996. And to try and stop it, that specific thing. But then after that, we found out that, you know, we had black young men and black women, girls that were being denied access. And then it got to be the Hispanics and the Asians and all California's educated kids, great kids, great GPAs, great performance. They should be there. And the one thing they all had in common with one another is that they were all American citizens. Forget the racial thing. Because they were all equally being discriminated against because they were American citizens. That was the one commonality. And, of course, what they were doing, the UC system, they were bringing in illegal foreign nationals or giving all the seats away to Chinese in particular because they come with a big, a lot of money with them. And so the university system right now does not have really a lot of California citizens in it. Unfortunately, they've chose to discriminate and bring in illegal foreign nationals or illegal or nationals from another country. And that's really crippled us. But, you know, I saw this whole thing transpiring. I realized there had to be some changes that were made. And I saw that California's legislature was really out of control. I also saw Arnold Schwarzenegger, when the governor, the socialist governor that he was, eliminated one of the most important assimilation tools that our society has ever had, even in the United States, and that was the California adult education system. Proud system, absolutely excellent system, especially if you're a foreign national and wants to learn English and become a citizen. Citizenship program and language arts programs to teach everybody English, and guess what? They eliminated that. And I thought to myself, wow, this plan's really coming together. because now we're stopping the assimilation program, and of course the preference was to stop teaching Spanish language kids English and eliminate the, and they actually did this in 2016, they eliminated the requirement that kids in California speak English proficiently by the time they graduate. They eliminated that, actually.
Balkanizing the United States, ultimately, yeah.
That's going to come around the United States, so Spanish will become the primary language, which is what's happening to California. So I saw this, and I said, there's got to be a way to stop it, and I realized it was the globalists that were what they were doing. They didn't want borders and so on. So we looked at this, or I did with a couple of other people back in 2009 and 10, and said, there's one way to stop it, and that is to create a new state. Because, you know, they really, we felt that the state had rolled over to socialism a long time ago. And now we're not only are we socialist, but we're a monoparty system, a dictatorship moving right into communism. And even today I got a report of a Christian school that was raided by the California Highway Patrol, of all places, people, and 17 social workers who were there to close down a school for teenagers that were at-risk teenagers. I'm very familiar with the school, actually. And it's a good school, but they raided it because they had heard some internet rumors. So this is, and of course, the Pacific Justice Institute is now taking that one on, but this is just the tip of the iceberg. Of course, we've got all these laws. The legislature works on an 11-month cycle. They can write a law today, pass a law tomorrow, and have it signed by the governor the third day. That's just the way it goes. There's 2,300. Have what are called gut and amend bills. Well, we could end up with well over 2,000, maybe 3,000 bills implemented just this year alone. So when you have a bill, you got a tax. When you got a bill, you got a fee. You got overregulation. So we're being choked out. And neither one of the political parties in California are viable. The Republican Party is not. It's absolutely not. In fact, it's filled full of never-Trumpers, Trump haters in the California Republican Party. And the Democratic Party is no good either, even to the Democrats. And of course, being in New California, one of the things we're trying to provide, or we will to provide, and what we talk about is that we can form a new state from a pre-existing state based upon the Constitution, which is Article 4, Section 3, which states that a new state can be formed from a pre-existing state with the consent of the state legislature and that of the Congress, and which is exactly what we're following. And there's a process that's tied into the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence that we put together, and we're following the plan of West Virginia and how West Virginia formed itself. We're following that to the T. And so far, we're the only one really standing and viable. In fact, we're being emulated around the nation now. There's a new Illinois program you've probably been hearing about. There's a new Nevada. There's a new, we're working with the people in Oregon for a new Oregon movement. They found, this is the formula to create a new state. This is, and it's going to succeed. We know that. We've actually been in touch with the administration, and they've accepted our paperwork, which is, I think, very, very important because, again, we're following the plan of the West Virginia statehood model. And
that's important for people to know, by the way. I use the word succession, which was ignorant of me. I mean, it shows my ignorance, and I think many people as well can relate to that. So this is a constitutional ability under Article 4, Section 3 to create a new state. Right?
Correct.
Okay. Okay.
And part of the other part of that is that we are leaning very heavily on the president right now because it's very, very clear. We declared our independence on January 15, 2018. We wrote up a Declaration of Independence, and we read it. We declared it. We were fabulously received worldwide on Twitter when we came out with that. There were several, and we were interviewed all over the place, Fox News, everything. And it's been very, very exciting. But what goes along with that are our grievances. And so far, since the Declaration of Independence, 71 weeks have gone by, and we've read 71 grievances against the state of California. And in those grievances, they center around Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution. And Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution is the guarantee clause. Guaranteed in the guarantee clause is a Republican form of government. Now, that means a two-party system. In California, we don't have that. We have a monoparty dictatorship in which they've progressively worked on and modified our Constitution to the point where we have a dictatorship today. And it is a dictatorship, and people are fast realizing it. as more and more of our rights are eroded every single day. With every day they're passing a new law that's more restrictive and more adverse to a Republican form of government. And then the next thing that's part of that is the guarantee clause says you're guaranteed for freedom from invasion. We have a guarantee. The president has sworn an oath that guarantees this constitutional right to it. And then the next one is freedom from domestic violence. Now, all three of those are not being guaranteed to the current United States citizen living in the state of California. And that's the premise for us separating. And we have been saying these grievances and pointing that out. And so that's why I say, like with the California Republican Party, it's no longer a representative party. And, you know, no longer do Californians have that right being guaranteed to them. And so I was making the pleading this morning on the radio that, you know, we want to form a new California Republican Party, one that will be supportive of our president, be supportive of our values, our Christian values. And then also, even with the Democrats don't have a viable, organization either in California. So we are inviting Democrats to come in. Because our invitation is, in New California, we are going to give you a Republican form of government. I mean, that's what we're trying to do, is give everybody a Republican form of government. We're also going to shut off all the money, everything that's going to go, that's been inducing and enticing illegal foreign nationals to come across this border. As you know, Jerry Brown, in 2017 alone, maybe you didn't know this, spent $27 billion of California money on illegal foreign nationals and then attorneys to try and get them to stay in California.
I didn't know that amount, $27 billion for illegals.
Billion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, the Oroville Dam, it gets back to that.
Yeah.
The Oroville Dam was about $1 billion worth of money was skimmed away from the Oroville Dam by Jerry Brown because there was a drought after a while. You didn't need the money, right? So they skimmed that away. And, of course, they used that for the illegal foreign nationals. But what happened to the dam? It fell into disrepair, and that's where the first blowout happened. Get it? Of California, they say, oh, we have bad roads, and that's true. We have very bad roads. All that money that was supposed to be used, gas taxes and everything else, we've been taxed. Talk about taxation without representation. We've been taxed, but they've been taking that money and spending it on their friends. See, the cartels run California. And all these people are guilty of the cartel behavior. That's what's going on. And what we have in California is we have drugs all over the place in the trafficking and human flesh and slavery, which is what the cartels live on. And that's what we see at the right now. So that's what we're trying to stop in New California.
But Paul, I've got to say this. I've learned a lot from your appearance here. And as far as New California is concerned, the website for that, the best website to go for
there? It's newcaliafornia.com, and sign up on the sign up, and then also become a member and help us out with your kind donations and membership to New California.
Paul, certainly we're going to do that. We're going to be behind you 100%. I want to again thank you for your gracious gift of time. I know you're a busy guy. Paul Preston has been my guest, Agenda 21 Radio. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. We're at the end of the program. God bless you, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you back. All right, folks, tune in to Paul Preston, Agenda 21 Radio. I want to thank everyone for joining me today.
Yeah, that was me with Doug Hagman just the other day, talking about all the things that we do here at Agenda 21 Radio and also NewCaliforniaState.com, NewCaliforniaState.com. I want to remind you to, of course, visit NewCaliforniaState.com, become a member. It's $10 to become a member in the New California State movement, and we're trying to move. We are trying to move, and we're not just trying. We are moving. There's no trying here. We are doing. We're doers at NewCaliforniaState.com and Agenda 21 Radio, of course. Anyway, a lot of things going on. You can rest assured that we're going to be taking a lot of action. Also, just to let you know, email me, paul@a21r.com, paul@a21r.com. Okay, we've got a lot of things coming up here in the next couple of days. Actually, we got, two more days of the week. Do you believe that? Yeah. Anyway, illegal immigration, illegal foreign nationals pouring into our country. Are we going to be able to stop them? We'll see. We'll see, but you know, all those are involved that doing this, they're not helping our country. Let's remember that.
Thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.